Hello and welcome to the Behind the Bra podcast, brought to you by Barbells for Boobs, where we believe in rad breast healthcare for all, and we strive to improve quality of life post-diagnosis. I'm your host, Ziana Hansen, and the founder of this incredible organization. Thank you for joining us. Today, we have Alicia Ryan, triple negative breast cancer survivor, CrossFitter, wife, and most important title, she is a dog mom. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today and taking time out of your life to share your story with our community. I'm super excited to, I know you started kind of sharing and I had to stop and say, wait, you're giving me the good stuff.
Too soon.
So welcome to the show. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh gosh, this is the treat. I make my podcast recorded on Wednesdays because it's like the hump day, and this is probably my favorite thing to do. And all the work that I get to do is, every time I hear a story, it's a reminder, you know, like sometimes, you know, when we all are of service in some capacity. Right. And so when you're in service and when you have a vision and you want to help, for me to have a weekly reminder to hear the stories, to hear the whys, I'm just grateful. This is my hump day and I love it. So
I love it.
So we're going to start today with my opening question that I ask every podcast. Who are you?
Well,
so going back to like, where were you born? Where were you raised? Like kind of give us a background all the way up until the day you were diagnosed with breast cancer.
I was born and raised in Sacramento, California, and I've always been very active, always been involved in cheerleading, soccer, softball, karate, anything you can imagine. My brother and I were always doing it. We were always active. And growing up, my dad had a lot of health issues. And in the last, he was always in and out of the hospital with like heart issues. And then it was a couple years before he passed away, we found out he got cancer. So I've got to see both sides of that. So taking care of my dad was a big priority for me, growing up as well. I had wanted to go to nursing school and I had started the process. But when my dad got very ill, I was going to school, working full time and taking care of my dad. And it was just too much. So I had to drop something. And I know school would always be there. So my dad obviously was number one. He wasn't going to fall off that list. But that's where, I stayed here because of my family. I love Sacramento and it's where I was born and raised. It's where my family is and it's where my CrossFit family is now. And
it's a very hot place.
It is hot. I don't like that. And it's supposed to be, I think, 102 today, but I'm inside.
My older brother lives in Sacramento. He's a lieutenant for Sacramento PD. And he contacts us every summer and tells us that he wants to move back to Long Beach. We're from Long Beach, California. And I'm like, you say this about June. I'm assuming that it starts hitting hundreds around June.
Yes.
But yeah, he always wants to get out of there for the summer. I'm like, but I think outside of that, he really enjoys it up there.
Yeah. When it gets to hundreds, it's just miserable. And
so you stayed in Sacramento. You grew up in Sacramento. Your dad how old was your dad when he was diagnosed with cancer? What kind of cancer was he diagnosed with?
He was diagnosed, I believe, when he was 64, and he had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And everything from the beginning was sounding good. They said that it has a good rate of them getting rid of it. And after about 6 months, he passed out and hit his head and we had to take him to the emergency room and found out he had a new tumor in his brain. And so I think it was about 6 months after that, it wasn't the actual cancer that he passed away from. It was, he had a massive heart attack from treatment. So it was from complications from the,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
But yeah, being on both sides
is something. I think that there's a message in it, right? So
yeah,
being able to survive cancer in a way as a spectator. I always kind of say I'm a spectator of it. I think that it helps you understand it once it does, you know, if it does come to you.
It did. There was more of an understanding.
Yeah. And I think that, again, I think that when a loved one does get diagnosed with any kind of cancer, you become a student of that cancer. So I think that that's the biggest thing that I've learned in cancer is, well, you now have to learn something that you weren't planning on learning. Like, I didn't want to learn this.
You become like an expert in something you never, ever wanted to know about.
Never, ever. So you stayed in Sacramento after your father passed away. You stayed there. Are you still really close with your brother, or what does that dynamic look like after your father passed?
My brother and I are close. He actually lives about 15 minutes away, and he took after my father. My father was in the military. He was a correctional officer, and my brother did the same thing, went to the military, and he's actually PD in Truckee, and he loves it. My mom and I are very close, and she still lives in their house and still wears her wedding ring and just all about my dad, but she's doing a lot better, and it's been 7 years, so she's doing good. But I was so nervous to tell my mom when I got my diagnosis, because I was like, man,
bringing that back, right?
I don't know how she's going to handle that.
So you are in Sacramento. Your father passes away. I'm sure that took and is still taking that time to heal and process and changes your entire family dynamic. How soon after your father's death was that now process of you getting exposed to your cancer and understanding your own cancer? And what did your life look like that? Were you married? I know you said you were a CrossFitter. Kind of take us through that pivotal time.
About 5 years after my dad passed away, I had actually met my now husband. We dated for a couple years, and then we ended up getting married on March 26th of 2018. And we had both been in CrossFit, but we also decided to do the whole nutrition thing. So we were like counting macros, eating healthy, everything, because we wanted to be just in shape in general. And I mean, you're going to see your wedding photos forever. You don't want to look back and be like, I really wish I would have done something about that.
I really wish I would have counted all of my macros.
Yeah. So we were happy and healthy. And in September, we went on our honeymoon. And towards the end of the honeymoon, I just started kind of feeling weird and off. And I was thinking, well, maybe it's just because we've been gone a while. We were in Kauai for 11 days. And then we went to Disneyland and Universal Studios for 3 days. So I'm like, maybe my body's just over it. I'm like, I want to go home. So I remember going to the doctor when I got home, and like several times, and we just couldn't figure out what was going on. She tested to see if I was pregnant, if all these different things. And then I finally started to feel a little better. And I was in the shower one day and felt a lump, and it felt like a marble, and it startled me. And I felt the other side, because I've never felt anything like that. And I told my husband about it. And it was a Sunday, so I told him, you know, I'm going to call my doctor first thing in the morning. And so I did. And she had me come in that day, and she felt it. And she was like, yeah, she goes, I honestly don't think it's anything. She's all due to your age and your family history, because nobody in my family's ever had breast cancer. She goes, but just to be on the safe side, I want you to get a mammogram and an ultrasound. So I was like, okay. So like a week later, I go in for all that. They won't do a mammogram because we were trying to have a baby, and they weren't sure if I was pregnant or not. So then they did the ultrasound, and the ultrasound tech, she was super chatty with me. And then all of a sudden she washed her hands and she got quiet. She goes, can I check one more spot? And I was like, yeah. And she checked my armpit, and then she like was not talking to me at all. And so I'm like, okay, something's going on. And she left for a little bit, and then her and the doctor came in, and she gave me a half smile. And that right there, I was like, okay, this isn't all, you know, my family, everybody at work was like, oh, we all have lumpy boobs. It's fine. It's going to be nothing. You're too young. And so she told me that she showed me the lump, and it had like roots on it. It looked really weird. And she called it sinister. And so I was like, well, that's a fun word. So she said I needed a biopsy I waited the weekend to make sure I wasn't pregnant. And then that following Monday, I did the biopsy. They told me they would, they biopsied my armpit and a few spaces in my left breast and told me within 2 days somebody would call me. So I made sure to email my primary after that and say, hey, regardless of what the results are, please call me and tell me. Don't call me and have me come in because it's just going to make me wait even longer. And so it was 2 days later, the day before Thanksgiving, I get the call and she tells me I have breast cancer. And I was home by myself.
I was just going to ask you now, in all of the testing from, you know, when you originally went in with your ultrasound, were you alone during that entire process?
The very first time I went in for the mammogram and ultrasound, my husband went with me, but he wasn't allowed in the back. And I remember coming out and just, I cried when I told him I had to have a biopsy. And I go, something doesn't feel right. And he goes, well, you don't know. He's like, they're just being cautious. And then my mom took me to the biopsy and was there. So, and then again, I came out crying like that day too. I'm like, everybody's trying to make me feel better. And my mom even said, she goes, do you know how many lumps I have and how many biopsies? And my mother-in-law said the same thing and all the women at work. And I was like, okay, you're right. It's going to be nothing. And then it wasn't nothing.
And so in your head, even though you had all of these people that love you telling you this is nothing, in your head, were you like, did you really genuinely feel that there was something wrong?
I knew there was something wrong the minute that tech quit talking to me and got very serious. And when the doctor came in and showed me, like, because that half smile and the way they talked, and I was like, this is not just a regular lump. Like, I know this is something else. And I wouldn't say it out loud because everybody was just trying to make me feel better and keep me calm. And they're like, you know, don't get worked up over something you don't know yet. And so that's how I went about it. And I'm like, okay, I have this sinking feeling in my stomach, but they're right. I don't know yet. So I need to continue doing what I'm doing until I know. And then when I know, either way, then we can proceed from there.
How old were you?
36.
Jesus.
No history, like nobody in my family. We've had other cancers, but nobody's had breast cancer. So I'm the first.
Yay. So you're at home. Yeah, you're at home alone when you get the news. What was the first thing that you did? Who did you call? Like, what was your first response to those words?
I asked my doctor, are you effing kidding me? And I said, I'm sorry. And she goes, no, those were the exact words I had. And she said, would you like to come in and talk face to face? She goes, you don't need an appointment. Just come in and let them know you're here. So I told her, I'm going to call my husband and we'll come in together. So as soon as we hung up, that's what I did. I called my husband. I told him and he was on his way home. And I called his mom and told her. My mom was in Lodi getting her hair done and she's like not the best driver. So if she freaks out, so I wasn't going to call her and tell her this news while she's in Lodi.
So I'm like, let me make sure she gets safely home first.
Yes, exactly. Whereas my mother-in-law and father-in-law, they were out of state. So I'm like, okay, well, I have to call and tell them. And I just needed to talk to somebody until my husband got home because, I mean, I was there by myself and my dog was a puppy at the time. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And I immediately turned off my work computer and I'm like, yeah, well, that, I don't give a shit about that.
That's
right now.
That's irrelevant right now.
Yeah. You guys figure this out because I got a real problem dealing with
it. I think that's the most fascinating part of something, you know, as significant as a breast cancer diagnosis or a death. I think that we've all experienced these moments in our lives where the things that we think are the most important things all day long become so irrelevant in a second. Yep. And, you know, like our jobs and our responsibilities and all the things that we think matter, it really makes you say what really matters at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. when you know, does work really matter? Do me finishing this email, me finishing this, you know, project, does it matter? When you get a diagnosis or anything significant as that, in the middle of your day at yeah. home alone at with home, your puppy.
So you, just so you, in my face, wanting to know what's wrong with me.
So your in-laws talked you through it until your husband got home.
Yes, they actually had to get off the phone, but I called my friend Anna. She actually works with me, and she's one of my project managers, and she had gone through lymphoma when she was 20 years old. And so I had texted her and I said, can you please call me? And she did. And I told her. And so she just talked me down until my husband got home. And she was, you know, even though we didn't have the same type of cancer, she was just, she gave me a lot of knowledge and hope and was very real about things that were going to happen moving forward, which I appreciated because I don't want, I mean, this isn't something you sugarcoat. It's, it is what it is. Right. The treatment is mm-hmm. what it is. I knew it wasn't going to be, you know, I'm going to take a special cough syrup and then be better. Like, it was going to be grueling. And I just didn't know what was going to happen. I remember asking my doctor when my husband got home, we got a journal out so that we could write down questions and answers. And she said when we got there that she, before she even called me, she put my referral into my oncologist and my surgeon. And she said, they're both women. They're both amazing and have great bedside manner. I really think you're going to like them. But because of the holiday weekend, I probably wouldn't hear from them until the following Monday. And this was Wednesday. So I was like, oh man.
So you're in the middle of it's Thanksgiving weekend.
Yeah. And we were hosting. So I was like, oh man, this is getting crazy. So I remember my doctor couldn't tell me much. She goes, we're doing a receptor test. And Mike had already kind of looked up, you know, the different types of breast cancer, which for me, I didn't know there was different types. I just thought breast cancer was breast cancer. And that is something new I learned. So she said, once we got that, they could, you know, go more into what I needed and a plan. And that's what my, she goes, normally you would see a surgeon first. She goes, but, she goes, I don't know in your case, I don't know what's going on. So, but normally it's a surgeon and then you see your oncologist. And so I'm like, okay. So we went home and I remember we made sure my mom was home. We went home and told her, and my mom, just from all years of having to take care of my dad, was just so calm and collected and was like, all right, well, what do we got to do? When's your next appointment? Who are your doctors? And she got her own journal out and started writing questions. And I asked her if she could tell some of the family because, you know, we were still processing it and it wasn't something I wanted the whole world to know yet. I did call Mike and I, some of our family that were coming over for Thanksgiving the day before. And we told them because I didn't want them to come over on Thanksgiving and either A, have us pretend like everything is fine and dandy, or just kind of blurt it out and happy Thanksgiving. Guess what? I have breast cancer. So that wasn't how we wanted it to go.
So you were able to still go and have, I think that the best way that we could probably phrase this is you have to move on with your life. You know, like it's that statement of, okay, well, yeah, I have breast cancer, but the one thing I've learned is you get to, this is still your life, right?
Exactly.
And so you still have control over the things that you have control over. So you could have easily canceled Thanksgiving and told everybody that you can't do it, mm-hmm. which rightfully so, everybody would have understood. But the thing I love about this is that you stayed focused on what you had control over.
Yes.
And you could control how you responded. You can control how you have enjoyed your Thanksgiving weekend with your family. Mm-hmm. And I think at that time, it was probably the most beautiful thing to have your family there at that time.
It was. And that's what my husband asked. He's like, do you want to cancel? Do you want people here? And I was like, no, I think it'll get our minds off of it. Cause you know, it was a blessing and also like a curse. I feel like waiting the 4 days because we got 4 days of where we didn't have to go to work. We got to process all this information at home together and with our close family and the close friends we chose to share it with, and like really process it and figure out what's going on. And, you know, we loved that. We loved having my family there for Thanksgiving because it was a sense of normal. And we were even able to joke a little bit about it. And that's just how my dad always joked about all his ailments. And that's what I've learned from him, is like a positive attitude, and you can joke about it. And I even had one of my friend's daughters like, you know, should she be joking about this? And she's like, mm-hmm. as long as she's joking about it, it's okay. She's like, sometimes you have to get through it with laughter. And that's exactly right. And even before I saw my oncologist, my first thought was, all right, I'm not going to let this get me down. I have to stay positive, and I have to do what we're going to do. And I'm going to fight no matter what, because this is my life. I want to be here. And this is just going to be a blip in the road and a story to tell later.
Well, I think it's kind of a blessing that you did have your mom that I would say has a PhD in cancer and how to support somebody through a cancer diagnosis. So I know that you got a little emotional saying that you were afraid to tell your mom, and having to almost resurface the pain of your father and that time that she's spent, you know, taking care of him. And just to hear how she responded so collectively, as she's just probably just her years of being a student and her ability to, you know, basically like, hey, there's going to be a lot I can't control. And again, I can control, I can be, I'm a student now. In my notebook.
She got her notebook out. Even my husband was like, your mom didn't even cry. She was just like, all right, what do we got to do? Let's do this. Did you ask this? Did you ask that? And he's like, damn. And I'm like, oh, well, we've been through this many a times. And I'm all, and I go, she'll cry. I go, she just will not do it in front of you or I go, my mom's, and Mike told her, you know, if you need to call and talk to me. And my mom's like, no. She goes, you need to find somebody to talk to. And so my mom leaned on her family. She didn't want to put that burden on Mike. She knows what it's like, you know, to be the caregiver to her spouse. And she told him, whatever you need, both of you, I'm here for you. And she told me, you know, I want to go to your appointments. And I told her, you can go to all the appointments you want to go. Please do. This is terrifying. And my doctor from the get-go, when they called Monday morning, that following Monday, they scheduled me to see my oncologist that Thursday. And that was the first thing they said, please bring at least one person with you. And I brought my husband and my mom, because even in that appointment, I don't think I remember half the things I was told.
I'd be like, bring a choir with you, because it's going to throw a bunch of information at you.
And I'm just like, I'm still trying to process that you told me I have breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So, and we had my doctor from the beginning, she said, she's all, don't go on the internet. It's going to lead you into a black hole of awful. She's like, if you are going to look anything up, she gave us the websites to look up. She goes, even then, she goes, don't get too crazy into it. She goes, don't. So we looked up like what the receptors were. And I remember thinking, like, on the triple negative, I was like, oh, that one's aggressive. I hope I don't have that one. And then we go to the doctor and she's like, you have stage 2 triple negative. And my husband and I look at each other. I'm like, well, shit. We shouldn't have looked that up. At least I knew what I was dealing with. I was like, I'm winning the lottery. I never asked when. Didn't even sign up for this one.
Now, were you still working out? I know that, you know, you belong to a CrossFit community.
Yes,
you're in the best shape of your life. get this,
so
you know,
annoying.
diagnosis. And this is, to be honest, this is a very common, that is such a common statement. I would say 90% of the women that have been on our podcast, that is the commonality that you all have, is I was in the best shape of my life. And I think that speaks volumes to, number one, what fitness and what CrossFit does give us is that awareness, that self-awareness, the advocacy piece to our body and wanting to stay healthy. And that might be that push that made you go and touch your breast, or even just have that awareness, or go advocate for your breast health. So that is such a common thing that we hear at Barbells for Boobs. So it does not surprise me that you still continue to go to the gym.
Like the crazy person. I remember telling my best friend is the coach at our gym. And so I had told her the day of, and I told her, she asked if she could tell people, and we waited some time. And so my husband and I had talked about it, and he's like, you know, this is you and your story and your journey. Do you want to share it? And I was like, you know what? Cause it was so terrifying for me. Like, all I remember in that meeting with the doctor is asking her if I was going to die. And she said, no, she goes, breast cancer research and treatment has come a long way. She goes, triple negative. She goes, responds so well to chemo. She goes, and you're young, which is great. She goes, it's kind of a double-edged sword. She goes, you're young. She goes, but it also spreads a lot, like quicker when you're younger. And I'm like, oh, well, that's super fun. So she's like, we're going to be aggressive. You're going to start with chemo. And I started crying. And of course, like everybody, the first question is, am I going to lose my hair? And she said, yes. And that's when I really started crying, because I had long beautiful hair. And no girl ever imagines herself being bald. Like, that's not your dream.
No. So, yeah, that's definitely, I feel like that's that was the hardest part for me, was watching my sister lose her hair. There's just a piece to that it's, I don't know if it's that for me, I think it was the fact that she couldn't no longer hide that she was a cancer patient.
Exactly.
And it was now exposed to the world that, like,
and people, some people aren't very nice. Some people stare.
Yeah.
It gets to, I remember telling my husband, like, we got in the car and him and my mom were like, okay, out of everything you heard today, what do you think? And I start crying. I go, I'm going to lose my hair. And both of them were like, from everything you heard, that's what you're concerned about.
Like, at first I went in thinking I was going to die, but when I heard my hair, losing my hair.
I'm like, I can't even tell you half of what she said in there, because I spaced out and telling her, like, is this real life right now? I'm seriously sitting here in front of an oncologist who told me I have cancer. Like, this is crazy. And I'm going to have chemotherapy. And I'm like, this is just weird.
I think that for me, just hearing that from you, because I think that you were predicting the next year look like having kids or a child, being a new wife, starting a family, that was on your horizon, right? Not, I'm going to be bald and I have to learn about this cancer and I'm going to have to do chemotherapy and I'm going to have surgeries and I'm going to spend this next year. And I'm going to have to spend this next year of my life with a lot of unknowns. And I think that is probably where the pause and the not hearing anything, because your life is turned upside down overnight.
Yeah.
And that's common. A lot of women are like, I don't even know what the doctor said to me. You know, like, because your life just changed overnight.
Exactly. You gotta talk to my husband or my mom. They wrote stuff down. I don't know.
Like, I have no idea.
I do remember her telling me, she's like, you know, I'm sorry you had to wait. And, you know, listening to other stories, me having to wait, as long as everything moved pretty quick for me, to as far as my checkups, mammograms, even seeing my oncologist, it just felt forever because it was a holiday weekend. But man, she wasn't kidding. She said, you know, things are going to start moving pretty quickly. You're going to see the surgeon, we're going to start chemo. You're going to have to go to fertility if that's something you want to do. I'm going to have to put you on Lupron while we're in chemo. She goes, because y'all are going to have a 50-50% chance of being fertile. And so that, you know, scared me. So I'm like, of course we want to have kids. And then you go to the fertility place and they give you this monstrous amount of information and dollars. And I'm like, okay, well, I was just diagnosed with cancer. And where would you like me to pull that money out of my butt? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I want to have a family. And you do get discounts when you're a cancer patient, but it's still so expensive. And so my in-laws were amazing. We never asked them for anything. They just automatically went into their financial advisors, and the money was there. And they said that they wanted to make sure we had a chance of having a family, just in case I wasn't fertile after all this.
And so I think that's a good point. And maybe, you know, a lot of our listeners out there may not understand that all the complexities that happen with a diagnosis of a young woman, especially mm-hmm. one that wants to still have a family, and that this stuff is just not just covered on insurance, you know?
Nope. This is,
these are in addition to already what you're going to spend in your deductibles mm-hmm. and your co-pays for all your treatments and all your visits. There's also a lot of things that insurance doesn't cover, but are really there to your fertility is impacted by the diagnosis of cancer,
exactly.
which doesn't make any sense to me why it wouldn't be covered on insurance.
Exactly. Like, what the hell? I didn't ask for this. I'm already terrified and upset. And now you're wanting like $25,000.
Yes. Yes. And there are programs out there that really do financially support. But at the end of the day, you know, you really look at our healthcare system and number one, I don't want to say why is it there, because I do feel like our healthcare system does support a lot of our mm-hmm. our healthcare needs when we get a diagnosis like breast cancer. But there's some things that obviously I want to be a mom. I mean, it's like
obviously, so
shouldn't this be an option in my insurance to opt in for fertility?
Yeah, I mean, you take care of breast reconstruction. What about the fertility aspect of it? It's there's women in their 20s yeah. and 30s getting this. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they supposed to do?
This is a huge topic, especially in our community, because we really work with, you know, our communities. Our average age in the Barbells for Boobs community is 42 years old, women in our community. So this is a very common topic of women mm-hmm. having to problem solve this. And it's costs a lot of money. And it's and especially right after a breast cancer diagnosis, you're young. So, I probably don't have just $25,000 sitting around.
I just got back from my honeymoon. So.
I spent it on my honeymoon.
We had a good time. Yeah. Everybody said we should.
Yeah, it's such a it's so sad to see that women even have to make that decision. You know,
it's you know, when you go in, I understand infertility in general, no matter who it's for, whether you just have problems in general or it's because of a diagnosis, it sucks. And to have the cancer diagnosis and you're still processing that, and to go in and then for them to tell you, you only have a certain amount of time to decide because you have so many days to do this process before I have to start chemo. It's very stressful. And it just, you know, the cancer's already on your brain. That's overwhelming you and taking up constant space in your mind. And then on top of this, and it's like, what do you do? Like, there has to be something to help people, you know, families, so that we could still have families. And because you don't know. Like, I didn't want to take the risk of not freezing eggs and then I come out of it and I'm not fertile. Like, for mm-hmm. me, that would be devastating. All I've ever wanted is to have a family. And thank God for my in-laws who were able to help us and just said, you need to do this, because I don't know what we would have done.
And that's a very common story. And like I said, it's sad that women even have to make that kind of decision. And the amount of time that you have to make that decision, most people probably couldn't come up with that cash flow in the mm-hmm. amount of time that you have to make that decision.
It's like literally a couple of days, because mm-hmm. you have to start as soon as possible to get stuff rolling mm-hmm. and getting the medication and all that. And I'm like, oh my. And then, you know, on top of that, then you have all these blood tests and different doctors to go see, and everybody's poking at you. And mm-hmm. I think half the world has seen my boobs by now. And
I will say that breast cancer survivors are they're very, very open to sharing their chest with everyone.
Yeah.
The
world. I mean, everybody's seen what's going on.
When I went to Power Monkey Camp with our little group that we took this past year to Power Monkey Camp, there was 14 survivors, and we would go. They assign you stations, right? And so mm-hmm. our girls were one group. There's like 8 different groups there. There's like over 100 people at this camp. Are you familiar with Power Monkey Camp?
I am.
Okay,
yes.
So we had this little group. They would go into the little station. I just went one day with them, just to, you know, kind of make sure that everybody was good and meet everybody. And so we go into the first station, and they all, like a few of them, introduce themselves by lifting their shirts up and they're like, we're the breast cancer survivor. I was like, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? And I left that day and I was like, I'm so sorry, Power Monkey. I promise you they will be on their best behavior.
They're just used to it. They're
totally used. I've never seen so many breasts in my life that night.
But I remember going in to get my port surgery, and my mom and my mother-in-law were with me, and they have you take a whore's bath in there, even though I took a shower before I came home. And my mom and my mother-in-law are like, do you want me to leave? I'm like,
no.
First of all, mom, you gave birth to me, so no. And my mother-in-law, I'm like, you've seen too, like, I don't give a shit. We all have the same parts, and I'm here because of, like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Just don't open the curtain. I'd rather not the whole hospital see, but they're going to have me butt naked on that table here soon, too. So whatever. Good.
It's okay. How long was your chemo treatment?
I had 4 months of chemo.
And then did they wait till after the chemo? So what was it? The chemo and then you had reconstruction?
So I had chemo and then I waited. My chemo ended April 9th of 2019. And then I had my lumpectomy on May 22nd, 2019. And so they removed my lump and then I had 11 lymph nodes removed. I had 10 in my arm and one in my breast that they had to remove.
Wow. So you're just about a year out of...
Yeah. I just celebrated my year surgery, and we found out on our anniversary this year that I had my follow-up MRI and everything looks great. I didn't need any biopsies. They even said some of the benign lumps that were in there have shrunk or gone away. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my goodness. It's so crazy that, you know, again, you have these new dates in your life, these new significant moments that, you look back a year from today and you just finished all of your surgery and how fast, number one, the body heals, how really this is a piece of your life. It is not your life, you know, but it definitely is. Okay. Like it was a little hurdle. I had to get over. So now that you're on this other side, kind of like freshly on this other side, have you guys now talked about kids or like where are you at with all of that?
We do talk about kids. My oncologist told me she would like us to wait 2 years until after 2 years since my treatment. And so at first I thought it was from chemo. So that would be next April. But she said all treatment. So it would technically be August of next year. I actually just talked to her and asked if, you know, things are still going well in December when I see her next, if we could just kind of start then.
Can we get a head start?
You know, I'm not getting any younger. So, and I'm just ready. I'm ready to be a mom. And I feel like throughout this whole thing, I no joke, and I love all my friends so much, but like 5 of my friends were pregnant.
Yeah.
And it just, I was so happy for them, but it broke my heart at the same time.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm like, how is this fair? Like we just got married. We went on our honeymoon and we're supposed to be starting a family. And I felt like there was this joke being played on me, like, you get a baby, you get a baby, you get a baby, you get cancer. Mm. And so I'm like, I know it's just, you know, it's about timing. And I thank God I wasn't pregnant when I was diagnosed, because if it would have been too early and I would have had to make the decision to either wait and start treatment or
do it while you're pregnant, which some women have had to.
Yeah, and do it while I'm pregnant or have the baby aborted. And so that's not, and that would have added a whole nother emotional.
Well, this is the thing that, this is the thing that hurts me and the things that I hear and I see and I've witnessed, because the one thing I think the world knows about breast cancer, number one, that it only happens in October because the world turns pink in October. I'm going to talk about our naive world here. And then people see that you're done with treatment. And so you're fine and you move on with your life and your hair grows back and all these great things. Mm-hmm. But again, just even this is the first time I've really heard a woman speak out about this of, wow, I want to become a mom, and having to wait because of your treatment and because of your diagnosis, that I always say that you have breast cancer for the rest of your life. And this is one of those things that I'm talking about. Like, of course, no, I'm not saying you have treatment forever. I'm not saying that it's in you forever, but I'm saying that the side effects, the trauma, all of those sayings are with you all the time. And this is a prime, this is a perfect example of how it impacts you for the long haul.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for me, I have a son, right? So for me getting pregnant, it was, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. My husband's going to kick my butt. It was one time. It took one time. I don't even think we had sex. I think he just looked at me. No, I'm just kidding.
He just looked at you a certain way.
He just looked at me. And I was like, I'm pregnant. And so, you know, I'm fortunate in that, you know, way that I didn't have any problems. I'm so blessed. I didn't even want to be a mom, and I'm so mad at myself for even thinking that, because it is such a gift to become a mom and get that opportunity. So my heart is with you on that, because I've seen women have, you know, have to do the fertility, all the fertility, not even have a husband, having to make those decisions when they're 26 without a man by their side. And so just hearing it from a woman that was ready to have babies, married, ready to start a family, and having to just intentionally put that on hold. And again, you have no control over it. It's just orders by your doctor. So listen to that world. Listen to that. When you want to just wear pink in October, this is every single day. This is how breast cancer really does impact women's lives. And it's sad for me, you know, it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. So it will happen. Do they know if you, like, would you have to use the fertility? Like, would you have to use, is this TMI? I'm like, I don't even know how to ask this. Like,
no, it's
are
not.
You fertile, girl?
Actually, I am. Thank goodness. They have given me the Lupron during chemo just as a precaution. They said it would give me a 50-50% chance. It makes things close down and the chemo won't attack it. You know, cells that aren't active. So it won't attack it as hard. So I think my last Lupron was in April of my last chemo. And then they said it could take 4 months to like six or more for it to come back if it did. And right at the 4 month mark, it came back. And then I saw my gynecologist and she's like, oh no, girl, you're fertile. And I'm like, okay. But now we have 12 embryos just chilling in a freezer somewhere. So we're going to use those. We've had some of them tested and I'm like, I can't just not use those.
Yeah. You're like, that was a pretty penny that
they were. I think my in-laws would be a little like, okay.
Well, and don't you also, and excuse my naiveness on this, don't they already have an assigned sex to them?
They do.
Yes.
So we had, we were very fortunate in fertility. I did very well. They had told me because of my age that I may not get too many eggs. And I ended up, they retrieved 30 eggs. And out of the 30, 27 were good, 25 fertilized. And then we ended up with 15 embryos.
Wow.
And so I was like, holy crap. And then from the 15, we had 8 tested. And from those 8, 3 weren't good and 5 were. So I know for sure we have 4 girls and 1 boy. And then the others that haven't been tested, I don't know what they are. So my husband's like, I knew it. I knew you were going to have a ton of girls.
Girl dad.
And he goes, why'd you find out? And I'm like, well, we have so many and I don't know which one is the strongest. And we're just going to let them tell them not, don't tell us what you're putting in. And we'll just see what happens when the birth comes.
When the birth comes. So, chances are it'll probably be a girl. That is so cool.
But we're both at the point where like, I don't care what the baby is, boy or girl. Like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Just have a baby. We want to be a family.
Just a baby.
We want to have a baby.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
We are so ready.
How did you find Barbells for Boobs?
My husband actually had done a lot of competitions for Barbells for Boobs, and I started CrossFit when I met him. And so he has all these Barbells for Boobs shirts from competitions, and he talked to me about it, about what it was. And then when I got diagnosed, he actually reached out to you guys before I could. And So I got sent all these modules to look at and stuff to read through, which I loved because I was so terrified that going through treatment, I wasn't going to be able to work out. Mm-hmm. And my doctors were so on board with working out. And they're like, yes, please continue to work out. Yes, you'll probably have to, you know, scale it down some, but it's best for you to do it. And then listening to all the modules about how, you know, it's good to work out. It helps with the chemo going in. And every single day that I had chemo, I actually didn't feel bad because they pump you full of steroids. Mm-hmm. So I get the best workouts in ever on days of chemo. I was like, let's go and get this in. And then the next couple of days kind of sucked, and I would mm-hmm. at least get up and take a walk. And then as I started feeling better, I'd get back down in the gym. And I participated in the Opens that year because I'm like, I'm not going to let cancer stop me from doing something I want to do. And if I have to scale it, then I scale it. If not, but I'm going to do it. And I
was
did.
Was this
I think
the Open in October, this past October?
No, the
or
one in
the
February.
Okay, the one in February.
Yeah. So I participated and I did better than I thought I would. And it was super hard, but.
Because you were still going through chemo at that point.
Yeah, I was in chemo.
Wow.
My friend would have me, because my husband, when I got diagnosed, started collecting stuff for us to have our own gym in the garage because it was cold and flu season. He was very iffy on me being mm-hmm. around so many people. So when I would go to the gym to do my actual open workout, I would go in after a class. My coach would wipe everything down. And I think the only one I insisted to my husband and my coach that the last workout, I wanted to be with everybody in there. And it was great because people stopped and they cheered me on, and I needed that because the last one was rough. And I even had friends come watch. And that's what I love about the CrossFit community is that you have people there cheering you on. And
No matter how ridiculous you look.
Yes. Because at first I was so upset. I'm like, I'm going to have to go to all these places bald. I told my husband before I lost my hair, I want all these wigs. And I ended up getting a wig before, and not one time did I wear it. I just rocked my bald head, and I'm like, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And if somebody wants to be a jerk about it, well, then you suck because I have cancer. How does that feel now?
So, how you like me now?
Yeah, you feel like a douche? Oh, you should.
You should totally feel like a douche. What gym are you at in Sacramento?
CrossFit Natomas.
Natomas. Yes. I don't know if I know that one. Doesn't sound familiar.
They're a fun little gym. I love them.
Look at your husband advocating for you. I love it. And we probably had just started all of our resources after diagnosis, really like implementing things. How crazy. Oh, we'll tell your husband thank you from us.
Yeah. We will. He's like, are you going to talk nice about me? I'm like, of course.
We're totally going to talk about you.
You've been my rock through all this. Why would I not talk nice about you?
I think it's so cool when somebody in our community, and this is the thing that is really special about our Resources After Diagnosis program, is hearing, especially coming from a man, we have a lot of men in our community that participate in Barbells for Boobs. I have no idea why, maybe because of our name, Barbells for Boobs. they love wearing the shirts. You know, we have a huge, I want to say 40% of our participants or donors are men, which is really high for a breast cancer organization. Mm-hmm. And to be able to have someone in our community be able to be impacted by breast cancer and then reach out to us and make that connection in their own life of, oh, wow, I've been supporting Barbells for Boobs for years. Mm-hmm. And now I finally get to utilize something that obviously he loved doing our events and kept. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he wears our shirt.
Yes, he does.
I mean, my 11-year-old nephew loves our shirts. He's like, where did I get those Barbells for Boobs shirts? I'm like, oh, my God. You're not going to be able to wear them to school, but okay.
You know, this is for an actual cause, okay?
that's to me is it's so special for us that we get it's this really nice system where, hey, somebody in our community needs our help. And we have so many in our community that support us and donate to us. And so us being able to create this program to help people in our own community has been so refreshing for us.
It's been amazing to realize how many people there are and everybody's story is different and how amazing all these women have been. And, you know, I've met a lot of you know, not everything's been bad about this experience. Like, nobody wishes to have cancer, but through it, I have truly found out who my friends are. People have stepped up and really helped us out and have been there. And I have met some of the most strong and courageous women ever through this journey that I can't imagine not having in my life now. Mm-hmm. And it's all because of cancer.
I think that during our darkest times is when we find the truest people, right? Mm-hmm. It's like during your hardest, darkest times mm-hmm. are the people that...
There was a few people that you think are going to be there that just kind of disappear. And then mm-hmm. people you don't know as well that step up and you become great friends with. And people from high school I hadn't heard from in years were donating and were bringing meals and donating workout equipment and constantly checking on me. And I'm like, wow. And that's when I decided, like, before anybody knew, I told my husband, you know, people are going to notice because, like you said, I'm going to lose my hair mm-hmm. and that's going to be a big thing. I'm like, so I need to tell people what's going on. So we decided to make a post about it, and people have just been so supportive and they want to know about your journey and they want to know how things are going. So I do. I've been keeping people posted. My husband does too. And I'm so glad I did because mm-hmm. I get to share my story and I get to get it out to my friends and other people that, hey, it doesn't just happen to women over 40 and mm-hmm. you need to be checking yourself and be aware of your body. And this can happen to you too. And I mean, 1 out of 8 women, that's a lot.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. It's 1 out of 7 in some states. I know Colorado is 1 out of 7 women in Colorado. So it's, and I think that when people just want to support, right. And mm-hmm. just like all Barbells for Boobs is a result of me wanting to support my best friend. Like, that's all it is. So much good does come out of breast cancer.
It does.
What would you say what was your biggest lesson from breast cancer?
Oh, to absolutely live life. Take it day by day. Don't worry about the dumb things and the people that don't really matter. If somebody's not going to be there for you, that's okay. Maybe they're not capable of being there for you in that way, but maybe that's also just a time where you move on and you find out who those true core people in your life are going to be. And you find out that, like I said, the tiny things don't matter anymore. When I went back to work and the things people would bitch about, I'm like, okay, yeah, well, that's... Don't get me started.
Okay.
So it's just, I have more passion to live. And even going through this pandemic, like, it sucks being home, but I'm like, well, I was home last year and mm-hmm. I see it as I get to spend more time with my husband. I get to spend more time with my pup. And we've been coming up with things to do in the house, fun stuff. We have our own gym in the garage. And, you know, I do the Barbells for Boobs workouts down there. I do my CFN workouts down there. I'm like, so we figure it out. So I'm trying to find like the positive in life. Like, mm-hmm. yes, cancer sucked, but there's always a positive with a negative. And as much as like a reoccurrence scares the living death out of me, I know I can't let that fear either. So we've turned the what if into even if. So even if it were to happen one day, we'll take care of it and we'll move from there. And I just know that no matter what, I want to help other women who are going through this mm-hmm. and I'll always fight. Always.
Wow. All so powerful. And I think that just even the way that the world started this year, period, mm-hmm. with COVID-19, this pandemic right now, this social unrest, I do kind of feel like Kobe died about 2 years ago. That's kind of where I'm at in this year, 2020.
Right?
I'm like, so much has happened. And like,
this year's been weird.
Is what, like, what is going on?
But we're in a really messed up, like, Hunger Games or yes. something. I don't even know.
But I feel so grateful to be a part of this, to the Barbells for Boobs community, the Resources After Diagnosis, the RAD community, because you all have such a beautiful, beautiful perspective on life. And being, for me, being surrounded by that and being able to continue to innovate and think through this pandemic and how do I continue to have Barbells for Boobs exist and support, and how do we keep going? You all have been nothing but like, oh, pff, this is nothing, Z.
Exactly.
We got this, you know, like, yeah, what do you need? And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to be okay. We're all going to be okay.
I know all of our friends sometimes will like moan and groan about it. And I'm like, girl, I spent all last year in like,
this is, we're okay.
I have cancer. Like, who cares? Like, you want me to wear a mask for a while? Okay. You want me to stay inside my house? Like, oh, darn, my house that has my husband, my dog, all of my comforts. I can watch Netflix and movies and work out. Like, okay.
No, it's been such a an eye-opening experience for us at Barbells for Boobs. Mm-hmm. I won't even speak up for, I'll speak for our entire team of just the community that we get to work with. Like, you all are so awesome, and we've had to really look at our programs and change things and innovate and, you know, rethink how we provide our services to our community. And I just think that we're super lucky to have you all. That's all.
We're lucky to have you. I've even told my doctor about Barbells for Boobs. She had never heard of it. And so I explained it. And she goes, oh, wow. She goes, that sounds like a great organization. I'm going to have to look them up. I'm like, you should. And you should tell other women about it.
And you should. Yeah, we are. We're finally in this place where we've our medical advisory board actually on Sunday is going to do the final like approval of all of our resources after diagnosis program. So we have like a 3-year strategy that we had it ready in March, and then COVID hit, and then we had to re-strategize it again. I was like, or not. Okay, let's change a few things. We're not doing gatherings. Okay. Let's, so we had to change a bunch of things, but now that they're all there, now our next move is how do we get more women in our programs? You know, mm-hmm. how do we inform more people about Barbells for Boobs and get more women active after breast cancer, stronger after breast cancer? So that's our entire now moving forward is finding more women.
Well, I will definitely be telling women.
Sounds like you're doing that work for us.
Yes, you do such an amazing thing for me and all women. We even talked about, like, I don't know what the world's going through and when October will be, but my gym had talked about, I was like, I want to start doing like every year Barbells for Boobs, you know, fundraiser. And they were totally on board. I'm like, we need it's obviously my coach tells everybody too, like how much they have helped me. And I'm like, it's just, you know, we got to keep getting the money in to be helping more women.
And that's where I love the ecosystem of CrossFit, you know, that mm-hmm. CrossFit community raises our funds. That's just what it is. And for us to be able to bring women back into this community through those efforts is, again, what's so, so important to me. And you know, for many, many years, as investing in early detection was key, and it was so awesome. It was obviously supported thousands of women. And now with our shift in focus after my sister passed away, it was almost like this, I needed to know the women we were supporting, you know, like I needed to, in order for me to understand the trauma in my life, was I needed to make sure that women were really gonna get better after breast cancer, not get worse. You know, like not go the opposite way.
I don't think people understand, like you said, after treatment, I've had a lot of people like, well, you're fine now. I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, there's lingering side effects, there's mental, there's emotional, like things that happen for a long time. And even my husband, like, you know, people forget about the person taking care of you. He's had all of this on his shoulders. He's had to take care of most things while I'm homesick. And then he goes to work and comes home to me not being so awesome. And, you know, and he's obviously going to be there. But even after, like, even now, he still, you know, is scared anytime I cough or have something, if I'm having a day of bone pain, like he's far more worried about it than I am. And I hate seeing that, but it's, you know, people don't understand that it doesn't just go away. It's not magically better. It's not the flu. You don't take some Tamiflu and rest for a few days and then you just tra-la-la on your way. Like, I'm still trying to get back to full time at work. I still have to take naps and I still deal with neuropathy and bone pain. And
that's what I think that, you know, the things that people don't understand is it it is a long term, you know, it's a long haul mm-hmm. with all the side effects and the trauma of breast cancer. And then it doesn't just impact you as a person, it impacts your entire family. So whether that be your husband, whether that be your kids, your dog, you know, your dog probably.
Yeah, my poor dog.
Your poor dog's right.
I know my husband's awesome, like, our dog loves you so much more. And I'm like, well, he loves me more. I wouldn't say more. He loves my husband just as much. But I mean, I was home. We got him in September and I was diagnosed in November. So
my dog definitely loves me more than my husband.
He's like, just say it. Just say it. He loves you more than me.
My dog will say it. He'll be like, yep.
I'm like, man, he goes with me everywhere. Like, this dog. And I don't know what I would have done without him. He was, you know, on the days people had to go home after taking care of me before Mike got here, or even, you know, when radiation came around and people weren't here all the time and, you know, you're having your mental moments. I don't know what I would have done without my dog.
Oh gosh. Your dog is, yeah, he's, my dog is the co-founder of Barbells for Boobs. I mean, I've had him for 13 years, Bandit.
I love it.
And he's, you know, he's been through everything with me. It's just, and he's always there. Every time I walk through the door, he's there and he's happy to see me.
And he's happy to see you. That's my mom. You walk out for 5 seconds and she's back.
Yeah.
See, Barbells for Boobs needs like little shirts or bandanas for dogs. I would totally put one on my dog.
We need doggy bags now. We do definitely need a, Bandit is definitely the co-founder of Barbells for Boobs.
I love it.
I wouldn't have probably gone through without him. I mean, really just like starting something new and putting your heart and soul into it and coming home.
Yeah.
And I had him to come home to. Sometimes I forgot to walk him and he would poo. Long days of spreading the gospel of Barbells for Boobs. He'd be like, you forgot about me again.
I'll show you.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to share with our community?
I think that's it. Just for anybody that's newly diagnosed, there is a world of help and support out there. And there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And you're going to have bad days, but just try to stay positive. And again, there is that light at the end of the tunnel. And there's always people to talk to and resources. And let people help you, because I'm so thankful for my friends and family who were there and continue to help us when I need it. So, and it's not all bad. You're going to come across some pretty amazing people and you're not going to be the same person, but you're going to be a better version of yourself. Mm. So,
mic drop. Wow. That's it. I might use that.
Use it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you so much. Where can our people find you? I know you're on the Instagrams. What's your Instagram name so that everyone can just
My
stalk
Instagram
you?
My Instagram name is Leashy2, Leashy2, two, and it's set to, it's not private. And then
she's open for you.
Yeah, I'm open. And then my Facebook is private, but it's just Alicia Ryan.
Boom. There you have it. All right. So today's lesson is live life to the fullest. Take it day by day. Don't worry about the dumb things. Yes. And you know what? If you are going through a hard time, you will find out who your people are.
You will.
And thank you for those lessons today. Lots of lessons. I can't wait to share this podcast. Thank you for taking us through your journey, giving us so many valuable words, and for encouraging women to get involved with Barbells for Boobs. That means everything to us.
Thank you.
I want to thank our assistant producer, Carla. She's sitting in here giving me the big eyes.
Hi, Carla.
She's like, I know her. And we'll thank our producer that's not in the building that left the assistant. We'll thank Chris Hansen. I don't know what he's doing. He's good. He's in the building somewhere. But thanks for joining us today. That's Lights Out at the Behind the Bra podcast.